We check in now with Peter Dykstra, publisher of Environmental Health News, that's EHN.org, and DailyClimate.org, for his take on what's shaking beyond the headlines. He's on the line from Conyers, Georgia. Hi there, Peter. What you got for us?
Hi, Steve. We're going to talk about big oil, big guns, and not quite so big coal.
Well, tell me more.
The new kid on the block in cable news, Al Jazeera America, has been doing some really strong reporting on a lot of environmental topics. Most recently this week, there was a series by Jamie Tarabay on some strange environmental bedfellows. That includes the nonprofits whose membership consists of many hunter conservationists and the political muscle of big oil getting together.
So you're telling me that big oil firms need bigger guns?
Yeah, well, the oil and gas industry is pairing up with the NRA. You got to remember, the NRA is historically a hunter and firearm safety group. They're also pairing up big oil with the Safari Club International, and the reason for this, apparently, is to back members of Congress who want to roll back endangered species protections and open up more public lands to oil and gas drilling. There's a recent report from the Center for American Progress that put oil and gas contributions to the NRA as high as $5.6 million in this past 2012 election cycle.
So what's the common bond between oil drilling and hunting?
Well, I'm not sure there is one beyond a hostility toward protecting public lands and endangered species. Most hunters, of course, hold a very strong ethic about conservation. You can't hunt wildlife if there's nothing wild out there. But there are some big game hunters who chafe at the notion of regulation, so government intervention becomes a common enemy for big oil and some in big guns.
So the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? What's next for us, Peter?
Got some news from the front on the war on coal, if there is, in fact, a war on coal. Coal's probably doing pretty well. Coal consumption worldwide rose by 3% last year. Its market share of world energy production is at its highest level since 1970. This good news for the coal industry is according to the annual BP Statistical Review, which is considered to be an industry standard report on energy use.
So if someone's concerned about climate change, this can't be good news. But isn't coal consumption going down in the U.S.?
It is going down in the U.S., but in the biggest economies of the developing world, coal is all the rage. You go to China, India, even Pakistan last week announced a huge commitment to coal-based electricity. It's even on the rise in Europe.
So if coal is at 30% worldwide, where does the other 70% come from?
Well, oil is still the king. Its market share is dropping, though. It's down to about one-third, 33% of global energy. Natural gas is rising, of course, due to fracking becoming more commonplace. And even though there's still a small fraction of energy production, wind farms rose by 21% this past year. Solar jumped by 33%.
Okay, Peter, well, take us back now for this week's environmental history lesson.
We've got a little lesson in geoengineering. It's when humans try to make things better by harnessing nature. 101 years ago this week, we learned of a grand, well-intentioned project that never happened, and it's really a pretty good thing that it didn't happen. June 1913, the New York Times ran a great big story about a super ambitious scheme to completely dam off all the entrances to New York Harbor and create a hydroelectric energy colossus. Those dams would also control floods, build a better seaport, repel invading foreign navies, and of course, they'd get rid of those unsightly and insanitary marshes and tide flats, according to the Times.
Whoa, completely dam off New York Harbor and Long Island Sound?
With controlled access for shipping, but yeah, completely dam off New York Harbor and Long Island Sound. Tides around New York City can run up to about 7 feet. They're theoretically a great source of tidal power. But part of the rationale in this proposal from a century ago is even then they were saying we're going to have to cope with running out of coal someday. And of course, the cost of damming off one of the largest estuaries on the East Coast would have turned out to be an ecological nightmare. What they called those insanitary marshes are called wetlands today. They're a breeding ground for all sorts of marine life. If you built dams all around New York, you'd trap the pollution behind them. And that would have helped make the whole New York metropolitan area unsightly and insanitary.
Of course, marshes and tidal flats protect against floods, and if there were more of them, New York might have done better when Superstorm Sandy hit. But the devil's advocate argument here is that those proposed giant dams might have saved New York from Superstorm Sandy and made the whole region less coal dependent.
Yeah, but I've got the devil's advocate argument to your devil's advocate argument, and that'd be that New York Harbor would have turned into a fetid, polluted, managed bathtub that would have been a whole lot less worth saving. Either way, this remarkable geoengineering scheme via the New York Times in June 1913 is linked from the Living on Earth website.
That's loe.org. Peter Dykstra is publisher of Environmental Health News. That's ehn.org and dailyclimate.org. Thanks so much, Peter. Talk to you next time.
All right, Steve. Talk to you soon.